to Washington. Cubs beat the White Sox, so the flip-flop there. The Cubs now in first place in the NL Central by a half game over the Brew Crew. This afternoon, the Brewers play again in Washington, D.C. Tonight, the Cubs and the White Sox meet again at the Cell. The forecast now from the National Weather Service, partly sunny today, a high of 79. And again, a reminder about a beach hazard statement in effect from 1 o'clock this afternoon through Friday night for Lake Michigan beaches. That means there is a high swimming risk due to potentially life-threatening waves and currents. You are urged to stay out of Lake Michigan this afternoon and tomorrow. Right now, wind from the north at 5, humidity 96%, 72 degrees. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. Coming up on 8:11, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support for the morning show also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. And we welcome you to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I'm pleased and honored to welcome back into our studios Dr. Art Sear, Clawson Distinguished Professor of Political Economy and World Business, Director of the Clawson Center at Carthage College, author of After the Cold War, and someone who has become a most recognizable voice on the morning show. We have Dr. Sear with us on a monthly basis to talk about a whole host of current issues, both domestic and pertaining to the world as a whole. And there's lots to talk about today, including, of course, the dramatic announcement yesterday that Foxconn, that gigantic company based in China, may indeed be expanding its operations to southeastern Wisconsin. And we're going to be talking about some of the ramifications of that and what goes into these kind of deals and decisions. And we'll talk about plenty more besides that. Professor Sear, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Well, thank you very much, Professor Berg.
Good to have you here.
It's a pleasure to be with you as well, and I actually mean that in this case.
Well, I happened to listen to you a few days ago when you were visiting the program Lake Effect on WUWM, and you made mention of the fact that you are just back from a trip to Great Britain. And although we want to get to Foxconn fairly quickly, but I want to find out what brought you to Great Britain and maybe reiterate the question that was asked of you by Mitch Tyke, namely, what was your sense while you were in Britain about the sense of the public there in terms of the matter of Brexit.
Right. Mitch, of course, is your counterpart on the morning show. The main reason for going over is the annual lecture at Ditchley Park, like the Council on Foreign Relations and other organizations involved in international affairs. Their annual meeting is a good, and other conferences, it's a good opportunity for networking as well as learning something. Ditchley bears directly on Brexit. It's a very nice old family manor house in the Oxford area near Blenheim Palace, Winston Churchill's family home. They have been in existence as a conference center growing out of the Anglo-American wartime and post-war special relationship, the very close alliance that we're all pretty much aware of, I think.
Right.
For many years, they had an advisory committee that was dominated by the usual suspects, the old Northeastern establishment that ran foreign policy in this country from before World War II until the Vietnam era. They depend on the U.S. for financial support, and they still have the Northeast heavily involved, but Sir Reginald, Reg Hibbert, normally a very senior British diplomat who's at the capstone of his or her career, will be the director. He'd been a very, for a diplomat, very colorful as well as very effective ambassador to France during some challenging years. In the 1980s, he showed up at the Chicago Council on Foreign Relations and was made several stops around the country, including, I believe, in Atlanta, Georgia and Southern California, and perhaps some other spots, looking to branch out. The country was changing, and I believe President Reagan, in office at the time in the White House, personified that. And so we developed a rather effective partnership. We'd have, I think every 2 years, as I recall, alternating conferences at Ditchley Park. And also, we finally settled in after Wingspread initially at the 1st Division Museum in Wheaton, Illinois, where we still have a collaborative relationship. We co-sponsor teachers' conferences with them and the Foreign Policy Research Institute. And the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, the successor organization, doesn't seem to have continued this, but the Ditchley folks still keep me on their list. And it's a very good use of time as well as educational. Secretary, former Senator John Kerry, delivered a superb speech, very timely, on climate change. We've just had a huge iceberg break off from Antarctica, which is really important. It was a very informed speech. We're constantly trying in different ways not only to formally invite people, but to get people to come to the college. He's a long shot, frankly, but I assure you we're following up aggressively and as skillfully as possible on this. That's kind of a long-winded answer, but the question goes beyond Ditchley. I also try to spend some time every year at the London School of Economics, a great source of research in their archives for my work. We have a collaborative relationship with the Royal United Services Institute, a military think tank founded by the Duke of Wellington a long time ago, and it's important to be in touch, as every business person knows, including the founder of Foxconn and Associates. You really have to see people face-to-face. Academics tend not to appreciate that,
right,
in my experience. But anybody who's going to survive outside, you've got to do that. You really have to.
Yeah. So what was your sense in terms of any of the people you got to talk to in Britain about this matter of Brexit, which has created some turmoil?
It's not an urgent crisis. It's created a lot of political turmoil,
right,
and I do believe that the Prime Minister's days are numbered. Prime Minister May is going down after the last general election. It is a very stable country beneath all the furor of politics, especially publicly reported, not unlike the United States, their offspring in a very real sense. It's never, I should stress, because of the multiple terrorist attacks in London and I think Manchester this year, that it's never been easier, safer, or less expensive to travel to Britain and a lot of other countries in the world. And that's one thing to stress to people who may worry a lot about terrorism. And Americans today worry a lot. You and I both know that.
Right. So about Brexit, that's what I want you to talk about.
You want me to actually answer the question?
Right.
Okay.
So anybody who you, I'm just curious about anybody you talk to there in Britain, are they generally speaking, and maybe it's hard to make a generalization, that's one answer, potential answer, but are they worried about Brexit? Are they happy about Brexit? Are they sad about Brexit? I mean, in terms of at least the people that you talk to and the sense that you got from them.
I wasn't dealing with bankers and financiers, and that's where, in many ways, it's most important. However, I did rub shoulders with a lot of other people, and it's not a source of great concern. It did come up. It's a well-informed audience at Ditchley, mostly British, but not exclusively. John Kerry got at least one question related to Brexit. But compare, I was a kid in 1961, but as a pretty serious one, and sitting in the library and watching the news, there was a real trauma when Charles de Gaulle turned down the British application to enter the European Union. I think in early 63 he actually vetoed it. But Harold Macmillan was really, really hurt politically. It's not what did him in, but it didn't help. In the early 1970s, it was a source of intense debate in the British Parliament and publicly. I don't have the sense that it's that way now. I think because of globalization, something that relates to Foxconn, whether you're in or out of a regional trade bloc isn't as important as it used to be. Also, our British friends got used to a two-party system over a period of several hundred years, and they now are faced with a situation where there are multiple parties. Theresa May is only surviving politically because she's made an alliance with a Unionist party in Northern Ireland, which is pro-EU, by the way. They are in a very complicated domestic situation, and that really is their natural tendency is to focus on domestic affairs in terms of daily business, and I think that's reinforced that.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Dr. Art Sear from Carthage College today. This is his monthly visit to the program. And speaking of business, let's get down to business with Foxconn and, of course, the dramatic announcement that was made yesterday in Washington, D.C. By President Trump.
Very dramatic, as usual.
that Foxconn appears to be committed to building a very, very significant, very large facility somewhere in Wisconsin, the exact location of which has not been announced. In fact, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel went so far as to say that site has not yet been chosen. So it's not just information that's being kept under wraps, but that perhaps they are still weighing a number of different options. But apparently Racine County is at the top or close to the top of the list of potential sites. Kenosha County is in the running, and who knows what other possibilities there might be. And this is a development which, if it comes through and comes to fulfillment, could mean many thousands of jobs here in southeastern Wisconsin. First of all, I think you've touched on this before when we've talked about Foxconn on one previous occasion, but the word if is important when we talk about if this comes to fruition. I believe you were telling us even last time that Foxconn has a little bit of a record of not necessarily always following through on announced projects. I mean, a couple of different potential projects here in the United States have, in fact, not come true, or facilities, in fact, ended up not being built. Does this feel different than that to you? Does this feel like something that is more likely to, in fact, come to fruition?
Yes. Terry Goh, the founder and brilliant entrepreneur that has created this enormous and enormously successful corporation, like a lot of entrepreneurs, he can't sit still, and he's traveling constantly. And again, that's essential for him, but he's made multiple stops in the U.S. Pennsylvania seems to be the one that had the most serious interchange with him and his associates. And that did not pan out, and there were a lot of complaints that they had been led down a primrose path. And then For whatever reason, the company pulled the plug. This seems different. The President of the United States was not involved in previous announcements. Pennsylvania felt confident enough that they went public with the news that Foxconn was going to relocate there. The amount, the sweetener involved financially, the money and guarantees being provided by the state of Wisconsin appear to be quite substantial, and there's been nothing like that before. It's so public, and they've gone so far down the road together, I'm confident this will work. Hmm. I'm a professor, not a businessman. Always keep that in mind.
Right, right.
Also, Foxconn has gotten some bad news and has had a bad press for all their commercial and financial success. And they would pay a price, I think, if they pulled the plug on this one.
Hmm.
Workers' suicides, dreadful working conditions, the kind of things that are absolutely not going to happen in the United States are still pretty commonplace in lots of the rest of the world, including China. And they have a strong incentive to create some good news and have the president praising them. And good press is particularly important for this corporation.
Right. In the NPR story that aired this morning, they actually had several different stories and several different
right.
analysts.
Good, good coverage. You and yeah. your colleagues should be congratulated. Very right. serious reporting.
Yeah. One of the interesting points that was made, I thought, is the fact that, in a sense, we as citizens are the losers, in one respect at least, because this scenario is set up in what amounts to a bidding war between various states here in America,
mm-hmm.
Ponying up with various packages of offers of subsidies for a company like Foxconn, and that because we are all competing for a plum like this, that that the amount of the subsidies being offered escalates.
Right.
And of course, every dollar that we are ponying up in a subsidy, in a sense, is a dollar that Foxconn isn't themselves spending.
Yeah.
And so the longer that bidding war goes on, the less and less attractive this deal becomes from our point of view, as Americans collectively, except if the deal in fact happens.
Mm-hmm.
And of course that feels like a very delicate balancing act, but how far do we go with subsidies offered before at some point this becomes a deal that isn't a good deal after all?
Well, Greg, that is called the real world, isn't it? And it's particularly important that academics, including academic administrators, keep that in mind. You can't be too rigid, and you can't go around slapping people in the face as your approach to management. In the business world, you don't last long if you do that. There are some very savvy people on both sides. The very good article in the Kenosha News yesterday has some very good hard information on this. Tom Still, the president of the Wisconsin Technology Council, based in Madison, I thought had some very cogent statements to make about this. It depends on a calculation of whether this will pay off for you eventually or not. Big money is involved, but high-tech and computer. High-tech and the computer dimension of the economy, the global economy, is particularly important and particularly promising. And Foxconn does not have, again, for the reasons I just mentioned, they don't have any reason at all to take Wisconsin for a ride or appear to be taking advantage of either the state or federal government.
Mm.
So I'm pretty optimistic, given that it's gone this far.
Well, that it'll happen.
Again, I'm a professor, not a businessman. I sit in that academic hothouse where people don't always negotiate very well or handle things very well.
Right.
I learned that firsthand.
Sure. But for instance, if the state of Wisconsin over the course of 15 years ponies up $3 billion in subsidies, which is, you know, unprecedented. I mean, many times more than any subsidy ever offered before, and we get 13,000 jobs, which is sort of the top figure
mm-hmm.
promised. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel did the math. I didn't, but that works out to $231,000 per job that we're the state of Wisconsin is, in a sense, paying out that amount of money per job.
Yeah.
I mean, jobs that are going to pay on an average somewhere in the mid-50s. So just at a glance, you know, an amateur looking at those numbers, it doesn't seem like it makes sense.
I don't want to overwork the business front, but there really are two cultures involved in academia and in government and in the nonprofit world generally, but especially in academia. The focus is on a solid, a static situation, a static pie that doesn't expand but may contract. Mm. Oh my God, Professor so-and-so is getting more money. That means I'm going to get less. My budget's going to be cut. Or, oh my God, the spending. Wow. A very contrary experience over many years in dealing with the business world is on the income side. The focus is on the income side. What are you producing? What are you producing for the institution? What's coming in terms of financial and other benefit? Hmm. There are not a lot of jobs involved in manufacturing generally. High tech is expanding worldwide, but like other sectors in manufacturing, it involves a tremendous amount and a growing amount of automation. You've got to look at what's this likely to produce in terms of gross and also net income. And I think that's important to focus on, and there we don't know for sure. But I did do some research after I got your email about discussing Foxconn last evening. And one particularly important point that business professors make, especially, is that there's a dynamic relationship between location of manufacturing and production and technological innovation. In 2009, the Harvard Business Review published an influential article by Gary Pisano and Willie Shi, another one of these people from China who seem to be everywhere sometimes, that there is a demonstrable and measurable, always important, expansion of technological innovation when you have production facilities on sites. So beyond the thousands of jobs, you should look to what this promises in terms of income for the company and the region and our country, and also the likelihood of technological innovation. I don't know, but it's reasonable to speculate that one reason why this area is so desirable for Foxconn and other companies is the powerhouse of Madison and the University of Wisconsin generally, and other institutions, including Carthage College, but in terms of very large scale, right, applied, as well as basic research. Business investment, commercial investment in production has all kinds of ancillary benefits.
Right. And by the way, as we're mentioning...
Is that a clear point?
Yeah.
Because I don't fully understand it myself, but I know it's important.
Right, right. Well, and in mentioning institutions of higher learning, my suspicion is, and have had some hints to this effect, the fact that that there is an institution like Gateway here in the area,
yes,
that could be a superb vehicle in terms of trying to train the workforce needed for an operation as large as this, which is no small matter.
Yeah.
In fact, I should think that is one very significant consideration when a facility this large is being considered or proposed, is where are the thousands and thousands of skilled workers going to come,
yeah,
who are going to work in this gigantic factory?
Yes, indeed. And technological training, it's why education at all levels is important, but especially the kind of education you find at a place like Gateway. Why that dimension is so important. There are always tech jobs available, truck maintenance, healthcare, and others, even during the recent severe recession. But finding people that you can hire is a regular business lament, understandably, and that'll be a major challenge, especially because unemployment is low, under 5%, around 4%. In Racine, traditionally, as you know, a relatively high unemployment area in this region, as well as Kenosha and Walworth. So it'll be a challenge, but that's why people go into the business world. There is this potential investment, and very important one in Wisconsin, is part of a more general trend of manufacturing jobs returning to the United States, because you're going to be close to your you're going to be close to your customers, you're going to be close to distribution.
That that answers what my next question, which was why
I'm getting better at this.
Right. Well, why in the world would Foxconn want to build a gigantic factory here if our labor costs are so much higher than they are in, you know, just about any other place on the planet? It must
higher than they are in developing countries. Our labor costs are not that high compared to Europe. And other major industrial nations.
Right.
Our labor costs are not as high as they are in Japan.
Right. But for instance, why aren't they just building another factory in China or India or someplace where they wouldn't need to pay their workers nearly as much as they'll pay them here? But I think you already touched on maybe at least part of what that incentive might be.
Yes. Again, these are automated, increasingly automated. Manufacturing generally is increasingly automated, and high-tech sectors in particular, along with very basic manufacturing of things like steel, are particularly automated. Jobs is an important consideration, a very human one, and should be central. And in this country, I'm very glad that traditionally it is, in terms of public debate and government. But there is more than just jobs involved. Half the truck traffic through North America goes through our immediate region. It's one reason why truck maintenance and roads are so important. Anybody who drives spends time waiting at railroad crossings. It's quite clear now why Warren Buffett targeted railroads about a decade ago for very, very heavy-duty, much-publicized investment. Not much in the news, but extremely important. There are enormous, and I mean enormous, rail freight yards still expanding, very substantial already, southwest of the city of Chicago. This trend, we're ideally positioned for all the problems in the traditional industrial heartland. We're very well positioned to take advantage of that. Mm-hmm. And I think Foxconn is here for the same reason Amazon is here, with a building that looks like it rivals the Pentagon to me, and Uline, and a growing array of others. Pay attention to CABA, the Kenosha Area Business Alliance. Todd Battle and colleagues do a great job of attracting business here and deserve a lot of credit, which I think they don't always receive. But they're also a catalyst for what is a kind of broad natural trend of recovery. There's also political considerations involved. I think it's reasonable to think that one factor is a very high-profile, positive, important piece of news from a company that's gotten a fair amount of bad press.
Mm. So that's in their interest in terms of burnishing their own,
of course,
PR profile.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Right. And of course, that was another story on NPR this morning that I thought was quite intriguing. There are ways in which we do not make sense as the target for such a facility to be built. That there would be cheaper labor down south, there would be more expertise out towards the West Coast. But they didn't touch on the matter that you were talking about, just the grimy business of transporting goods.
You're underscoring again the importance of transportation outside of the federal U.S. highway system. This phenomenal network for which Dwight Eisenhower deserves a lot of credit, which that should be acknowledged more often, in my biased opinion. You don't have the same kind of infrastructure in the South, even around Atlanta. Dating from the Civil War, one of the things that another presidential genius saw immediately, Abraham Lincoln, was the extraordinary potential and importance of the railroads. The North had the infrastructure, even in the early 1860s. The South had almost nothing. And Northern rail lines radiated east to west. Southern rail lines, in the developing northern capitalist system, southern rail lines tended to be like stars radiating from major metropolises, especially Atlanta, Georgia, but they didn't have anything like the scale that the North had.
And you're saying
that's only more true today. That's only more low labor costs.
So they're still at a disadvantage in that respect.
And others, yeah.
Interesting.
Constantly touting Republicans who are and business people down there who are constantly touting the fact that we have right to work. You know, we're basically hostile to unions. Come and invest with us. There are lots of other things besides whether you have a labor union in place or not.
Interesting.
Well, I'm glad it's interesting.
So one of the big questions, of course, is exactly where this is going to land. And you know, one of the possibilities is pretty much right in my backyard, very, very close to where we live on the south side of Racine. But that's one of a number of different potential spots. I read in one story that President Trump, while flying in to speak at Snap-on Tools a few months ago, saw this huge empty area right in the middle of Kenosha, of course, where the car plant used to be, and he was heard to remark, you know, something needs to go in there, something needs to be built, and who knows, maybe that'll be where Foxconn goes. But give us some sense, again, you're a professor, not a businessman, give us some sense of what a company thinks about in making first the big decision of should we come to America, should we come to Wisconsin, and then even within Wisconsin, where should we go, where should we put this? I mean, what likely are the most important considerations when it comes to a really significant decision like that?
Well, you're right. I'm not a business person, and I'm not even a business school professor. I'm very glad to be working at the Clausen Center for World Business, and we have a very powerful business major and a very popular one at Carthage, and we're instituting a new graduate degree, which, thanks to Jennifer Madden, is in business, is doing quite well initially. I'm in the political science department. We do have the rule of law. We do have great stability, despite all the scary news, which isn't always fake, but is often exaggerated. We are a very stable, law-abiding environment, which means contracts. Compared to other parts of the world, including China today, contracts will be respected. Corruption is present. Crime is present, but not like other places in the world. It's why we have been increasingly, and I believe will continue to be, a tremendous base for investment, a tremendous base for investment. There's tremendous emphasis. The president used it very effectively and successfully in the 2016 presidential campaign. Tremendous emphasis on other countries taking advantage of us on because of their bad practices and reflecting our good guy status. They're taking advantage of us. In point of fact, the picture is a good deal more complicated than that. Jeremy Haft, there's a very good annual book published by the Foreign Policy Association called Great Decisions. Jeremy Haft has a very, very, an entrepreneur as well as adjunct professor at Georgetown University, a chapter on trade and globalization. Gross domestic product has been used since the Great Depression. The Commerce Department and the Roosevelt administration were desperate to get some numbers concerning how bad things were and whether we were improving. Gross domestic product is what is spent in the economy, what you bring in, and what you sell in terms of exports, minus what you send, what you bring in in terms of exports, and what you minus what, I'm obviously not a business professor, what you spend in terms of imports. It's a figure that is increasingly removed from reality in the global economy. What he looks at instead, and others, including the Federal Reserve Board, do this, is household wealth, what we own, not an income and expenses statement, but a balance sheet, what we own compared to what we owe. And when you look at that, according to these numbers, we have net assets of something like $90 trillion. China, whose economy is supposed to be larger than ours, and by some measures is in terms of gross manufacturing jobs, they are still in the neighborhood of around $20 trillion, and we're expanding. A stable, efficient environment, very good infrastructure, and the rule of law, I think, are all important in this. So those are the other things that one can assume savvy business people are looking at.
Right. And, of course, that's exactly the kind of relatively intangible matter that not only doesn't make the headlines, but scarcely gets mentioned at all, especially in the mainstream media.
Right.
But
well, that's why we're here, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Did you want to talk about some other parts of the world and other developments?
Well, in just a moment.
Okay.
So this is something that, as you were saying, will presumably move forward. And of course, subsidies this high need to be passed by our state legislature. I would assume. So you're not a business professor, but you are a political science professor. Mm-hmm. Can you conceive of a scenario in which this wouldn't move forward politically, or would it be, in a sense, political suicide for anybody to raise serious objections to something like this?
I think it'll probably pass. Keep in mind, I didn't think Donald Trump could get nominated or elected. So take my statements of any kind for make your own judgment. The governor has had some problems, especially regarding highways, with his own party. But the Republicans do have a majority. They tend to be more in favor of freer trade and more in favor of facilitating business activity and business investment. I'd be surprised if there were a big controversy in the legislature. Governor Walker has played his cards very close to his vest until yesterday, I believe, and I don't think he would be willing to go public if this didn't look pretty good.
Right.
He hasn't had an easy time, and Lyndon Johnson used to say that being an executive elected office is like being a ship, and a ship collects barnacles. And over time, you're going to get more and more barnacles. This was while he was going down during a really terrible time.
Right.
Yeah, and he was remarkably perceptive and cogent for such a flawed man, let me say.
Here's the last thing, and this steps a little bit away from Foxconn to something more general. Part of President Trump's most fervent base seems to be a kind of conservative that is extremely wary of globalism. And you were just really kind of touching on this, but I want you to say a word about the fear that a fair number of Americans have with this notion of globalism, and a fear of the United States somehow getting kind of swallowed up and sort of, in a sense, maybe losing its identity and losing its sovereignty. In this global world where we're all connected to the point where after a while, I mean, borders become less meaningful and this and that. I mean, part of what apparently got Mr. Trump elected president was in a sense speaking to this fear.
Absolutely.
But you as are one of the most eloquent champions I know of of globalism. So I just want you to say a word about that.
Yeah.
I mean, is there a grain of truth in that fear of globalism?
Yes.
And what do we do with that? I mean, is globalism something that should be curbed, curtailed, reversed, or is that not even possible and or desirable?
I don't think it's possible, actually. The enormous force and power of global economic trends, driven by very powerful corporations, but also by all kinds of organizations and businesses, large and small, that find it profitable, I don't think is stoppable. It's one reason why Brexit is not as controversial among people in political circles, but the British voted very narrowly in favor of withdrawal. It was not a mass populist movement there. And it isn't here. I don't think it's stoppable, but I think it's a leadership question for politicians and politicians in this country. The Washington establishment is the obvious target, but not them alone. Trump very brilliantly exploited this hostility and anxiety, which is why the politicians are emphasizing jobs. You and I are talking about ancillary technological benefits, ancillary positive aspects of an investment in Wisconsin beyond jobs. But you're right. Trump appeals to tens of millions of our fellow Americans whose votes are as valuable as ours, are as important as ours. That's the genius of our system. And clearly, not only in this country, but in other countries, including Europe, including the Philippines, a lot of people are discontented by the tremendous, tumultuous change that capitalism brings in global terms.
Isn't this...
And it's a test of political leaders, but it's why the politicians are emphasizing jobs.
Right. So isn't this announcement about this potential opening of a new factory of Foxconn here in southeastern Wisconsin, isn't that an example of globalism at play? I mean, without globalism, would this happen?
Without freer trade, with the kind of protectionism that we had before and for some years after World War II, no, it would not. And the structural environment, including especially transportation, as well as communication, but especially transportation, which is why I keep returning to that. It was literally a very different world back then. That's why President Trump emphasized jobs. Part of his theme was bad foreigners are taking advantage of us, good guy Americans, and I'm not exaggerating in his case. But another part is we're going to bring jobs back here. And he and Terry Goh come together in the sense that they're both looking for political and public relations advantage as well as business profits for Foxconn and for an income for our country. But it's a very good deal in the sense that it's the other part of President Trump's campaign theme. We're going to bring jobs back to America.
Right. I guess I'm just underscoring the irony of it.
Of course.
Because you're speaking to the same base that does not like globalism, and yet without globalism, without a global economy, you wouldn't have huge countries in China building factories in southeastern Wisconsin, would you?
Yeah.
If we didn't have all these connections that have caused all of these problems, you also don't have these connections that make this kind of a deal possible and attractive.
Yeah, exactly.
So both are true in a sense. So.
The more people get to know each other, the less likely that you'll have, that tends to mitigate conflict. Not always true in one's own family and, in personal life, but in terms of foreigners, the more we get to know each other, the better. Mm-hmm. Dwight Eisenhower, when the Allies were overrunning the death camps, and they truly were shocked, the top commanders along with line GIs and troops, at what they were experiencing, nobody conceived that something on this scale was going on. Eisenhower said two things. He said to his very large staff repeatedly, I want you to collect everybody you can, not just German POWs and German civilians, but everybody, including our troops, Allied troops, especially reporters, especially photographers, because down the road, I don't know exactly when or where or even who and why, but people are going to pop up out of nowhere that we've never seen before. Sure as hell you can bet on it. They're going to appear and say this never happened. I want so much evidence. I want so much evidence that this is going to be undeniable. And the other thing we should do is basically forget about the Nazi generation. We want to focus on young people, on children especially. And as soon as he got to the White House in 1953, he inaugurated the People to People program, which we all know about because, like a great executive, which he was able to see something that did not require a huge federal subsidy or a new government department. But that once you sparked it, people would pick up on it naturally. Eisenhower was jumped over several hundred. He was a new brigadier general. Roosevelt and Marshall picked him because they perceived, especially Marshall, who was his mentor, they perceived that talent in him. Get people to know each other. And he said repeatedly and practiced in different, not dramatic ways, different things that got us together with the rest of the world. A lot of that, he was such a magician and such a genius, in every way that you didn't have the kind of conflict and color that you had in the Truman years, or especially the Kennedy and Johnson years. But nothing went wrong during the height of the Cold War. People think about that. Nothing of consequence went wrong. And I'm convinced that working together, building coalitions, appealing to a wide range of self-interests and getting people together, that is crucial. I do that in my own work.
Right.
Not always easy, I must say, but right. I do that in my own work.
And maybe this is also another kind of example of that occurring.
Yeah, exactly. I do that in my own work, not because I'm a great executive, but you can learn from people.
Right.
Why is this woman, this man, why have they been so effective?
Right.
And so I believe the human interaction is going to be remarkably valuable, and it's going to help reform China, which still remains a very corrupt and very ugly combination of communism and capitalism.
Interesting. President Trump, of course,
I hope the Consul General isn't listening.
In announcing this yesterday, of course, was attaching himself to a very, very positive story and at the heart and soul of his message to the American people. And it's much needed good news in the wake of what have been plenty of bumps in the road for the president and his party in terms of their struggles to repeal the Affordable Care Act, the abrupt resignation of Press Secretary Sean Spicer, President Trump continuing to express his unhappiness about Attorney General Jeff Sessions, and of course this Russia investigation that really dogs the president and is generating all kinds of unhappiness on his part. Where do you see the Trump administration at this point in time? Are they in significant political peril? And in terms of their effectiveness, in terms of accomplishing things, where do you think things are headed?
I don't know where things are headed. As far as I know, there's no actual evidence. Mueller, who was not a friend of Trump in the administration, who is a friend of James Comey, the special prosecutor, is still early on in what will be a long-term continuing investigation. Talking to Russians is not in and of itself a crime. For all the hullabaloo in the media, all the intense focus by the media, partly because there's not a lot of really bad news in the world outside of the usual chaos in the Middle East, unless there's evidence of criminal activity brought to the surface, I don't think the president is in great danger. He wants to be the center of attention, and I must say he's accomplished that. You and I have been spending a lot of time this hour talking not just about Foxconn, but about the president. Richard Nixon, after he was forced to resign from office because of criminal activity and his own self-destruction, he very graciously met with younger Republican aspiring politicians, young men and women in the party. He really saw his good and generous side. And people would ask him about controversy. What about the danger of controversy? And he invariably would reply, don't worry about controversy. Look what it did for my career. Worry about being boring, because when the people lose interest, then you're finished. When the people lose interest in you in politics, then you're finished. Now, he engineered what remains, I think, the most remarkable comeback in American political history after losing narrowly to Kennedy and then losing by a more significant margin as governor in his race for governor of California 2 years later, and he came back. He also wrote 6 books after leaving the White House, and they're worth reading. They're really, really worth reading. They can be kind of boring, but the policy advice and the insight in domestic as well as foreign policy are really, really significant.
Right.
I assume serious people listen to you and me talking, especially by the end of the program. Now, Nixon is extremely important.
Right.
Continues to be.
Well, and President Trump, whether you adore him or despise him or someplace in between, is anything but a boring figure. And certainly what he says and what he does has galvanized political interest and dialogue in this country in a really extraordinary fashion. And We'll see what's next for him. And we'll see what's next with this huge Foxconn story. And I appreciate the insights that you've shared with us today. Dr. Art Seer Clausen, Distinguished Professor of Political Economy and World Business at Carthage College. Great to have you here, as always.
Well, thank you so much, Greg. It's obviously an important topic because we spent the whole hour on it, didn't we?
So thank you again for being here. Tomorrow on The Morning Show, Nicole Thompson joins us. She is with Downtown Kenosha Incorporated. Support for The Morning Show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance career in teaching, convenient evening and summer courses designed for the working adult. More information available at carthage.edu/grad. Support also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's.